You're listening to WWBC, Cocoa, Merritt Island, Melbourne, Titusville, and the Beaches, 1510 AM, as well as W234BI, Cocoa, Vieira, 94.7 FM, and W264AS, Melbourne, and Palm Bay, 100.7 FM.
Hello, Space and Treasure Coast. This is Sita Biggie on AM 1510 WWBC, FM 94.7, FM 99.9, and FM 100.7. This show is called Viewpoint with Sita and Friends, and we have an action-packed show today. We're talking a little bit about kitchen table topics and things that are going around our nation, and we're going to be talking about Hospice of St. Francis. So my co-host today is Dr. Amasitia Maloon Gibson with MGA Professional Development. Welcome to the show, and thanks for co-hosting and taking Ellen's place today.
Well, thank you for having me, Sita Bajul.
See, you said it's Biggie.
Biggie.
I love your glasses.
Yeah, I love you.
And my friend Angie Dunn is here, and Angie is the operational manager for Hospice of St. Francis. Welcome.
I am.
And then, of course, we have Dottie. Dottie is here. Dottie Allen, and she's the Chief Philanthropic Officer with Hospice of St. Francis. Welcome, Dottie.
Oh, it's my pleasure to be here.
And for our listeners who are tuning in to Viewpoint with Sita and Friends, our show is fun, it's unscripted, it's very educational and informative, and we try to give back to the planet what was given to us. We're going to have a nice conversation about the quality of life versus the quantity of life later on with Angie and Dottie. And then Dr. Gibson is going to talk a little bit about what she does as well. But I just wanted to say for my friends who are tuning in, you know, today is Rosh Hashanah.
Yes, it is.
And I have a lot of very good friends who are celebrating today. Rosh Hashanah started on the evening of Sunday, September 9th. And it ends the evening of Tuesday, September 11th. So for all my friends, enjoy the time with your family and friends. I don't know if you guys heard about it, but we had more shooting. We had a young man that died recently at the hand of a police officer. And I pray for that family. You know, the family was from St. Lucia.
Yes. Yes.
And I didn't realize it was an islander like ourselves, Dr. Gibson, but I heard about his mom, and there was a story behind that. The family had saved so much money to send him to the United States to study. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, now he's passed away from gun violence. So I felt really bad about that.
Right.
And I think there's more to that story, and I think it's going to come out later on.
Yeah, well, they're doing an investigation, an external investigation. And basically all we could do is pray for the family because we don't know what happened. And I heard they made an arrest. And
it's in Dallas.
Yeah, in Dallas.
And also we can pray for common sense gun reforms as well, so that people don't use guns so readily, whether off duty or on duty, right? I mean, I don't understand how you could get into an apartment and not know it's not yours. I mean, that's what the police officer was claiming, that she had no idea it was her apartment. I would know my door. I would know my furniture. I would know my drapes, my curtains. I would know my stuff. You know, I know my things. But anyways, I was on the campaign trail, and I've been speaking with so many people, men and women, who their spouses are now on Medicare, and the ladies are so much younger, and they don't have insurance, and a lot of them can't afford the insurance premiums. And my platform running for office is about the economy, healthcare, environment, and jobs with benefits. And so I have a friend who lives in Maryland. His name is Ted Atney. And I asked him to call in today because he is one of those people that understands when people call Democrats a socialist, that we're not really a socialist. We're actually looking out for everyone, because I think everyone have that right to wake up every day and have the security and the safety of knowing that their families won't go broke if somebody gets sick. And if you don't have health insurance, that's what's happening to a lot of people. So a lot of the people that I meet on the campaign trail, that seems to be their number one issue. They just can't afford the premiums. And if their husbands have Medicare and the wives don't have it, a lot of these wives have to return to the workforce. And they face a lot of discrimination as well with age and gender and, you know, not having computer skills. A lot of stuff is happening. So I know Ted's on the line. So, Ted, thank you for calling in.
You're welcome.
So,
can you hear me?
Yes, we hear you really well. Actually, our studio now is equipped to where I don't have to wear headphones to hear you, which is great. So tell our listeners a little bit about yourself before we jump into a quick discussion about why we should not call people that want health care for all socialist.
Okay, my name's Ted Athey. I'm running for congressman in the 6th District of Maryland as an independent, okay? And I've sold Medicare supplements before to seniors, okay, through Senior Benefits Incorporated. Okay, they're located up here in Maryland and down there, Port St. Lucie, I believe, Florida. And then also Bankers Life insurance companies. And Bankers Life is all over Florida there, and they sell Medicare supplements to seniors on Part A and B, okay? And then they sell Part D prescription drug plans, okay? Now, when I worked in them offices, I know these people, they're mostly Republicans, and I've, you know, met bunches of them at meetings like in Philadelphia and that, from Hagerstown, Maryland, which is about 120 miles away there. So, you know, by meeting them and all talking to them, I know they thoroughly understand that seniors elderly people above 65 have your most illnesses, your most sicknesses or diseases, okay? So now they know if you add, you know, children that have no problems that are born, that, you know, and you add them into, like, people who don't have illnesses, and with people that do have illnesses, group insurances work this way through businesses from years ago that I know of, that I've worked with, okay?
Yes.
So you're going to lessen the cost to those seniors or to the more people with more illnesses.
Well,
okay?
You have a larger risk pool to collectively,
yes.
I mean, you lower the risk and you lower the premium, the premiums as well, because you have more people that buying into it.
Absolutely. So now if you think of this logically and you say, well, I take little Johnny or little Susie, 3-4 years old, to the doctors, how many times do you take little Johnny and Susie to the doctors each year when they're 3 and 4 years old? How many times do you take them to the doctor? My wife's a pediatrician, too, and here in Hagerstown, Maryland. They got a nice group here in Hagerstown, Maryland, okay? So we discuss all this stuff. So anyway, if you take, and she's a pediatrician, so if you take little Johnny or Susie to the doctors, you're only taking them like 2 or 3 times. Is that correct?
That's correct.
So now you got to think of it logically. How many times do we take these people to doctors? You know, but you got to, you know, just think that you're going to be covering them from birth to death.
Yeah, I saw that on your website where you were advocating for coverage from birth to death. And it would promote a more healthier, and it would also promote more preventative care so that we can catch the diseases before someone requires so much attention for diseases. So, Ted, why do you think, now your wife's a pediatrician and my husband is an emergency room physician as well, and they're on board with Medicare for All, or a system that covers everyone. And I think most people that I've been speaking with, that's what they're saying, that, you know, we should focus more on education, on preventative care, and making sure that there's a larger amount of people to cover so that the risk is less. Why do you think people like you and myself and your wife and others, why are we being called a socialist if we want healthcare for Americans? We're not asking for the healthcare for people in another country. We're asking for people right here in the United States to be covered.
Well, first of all, that's a boogeyman word they use to scare everybody, to make them worried. That's how the CIA acts when they go overseas, and they try to infiltrate other countries and do things like to Mossadegh, like in Iran when they took over their oil. They wanted their oil, you know, BP, petroleum, Winston Churchill, all that stuff. It's just a boogeyman word, you know. It's just keep you guys all frightened, like this ain't going to work. You know, keep you in, you know what I mean, chaos. And you know, logic tells you that it's going to be cheaper with a bunch of people involved, which 325 million people across the United States of America, okay? And you talk about socialism, I mean, we pay out of our work. We earn money that's taken out of our pay to pay for Social Security and Medicare. 7.65%. 6.2% goes to Social Security. 1.45% goes to Medicare. So they are separate entities from the federal government. And I went to the CBO, Congressional Budget Office, okay, and they started saying, well, we got to write something on and put it out and just try to measure it and all this other stuff. And I said, man, this is a bunch of lies. It's misleading information, and it's definitely fraudulent. And I said, if I make congressman, you guys got a lot of discussion to be had, and it's going to be on national TV.
Well, you know, I mean, I think there's definitely waste and abuse and fraud in so many ways with insurance companies, yeah, and how they bill and how people are treated.
Exactly.
But at the same time, you know, we do spend an awful lot of money on wars, and then we have to give contracts to people to rebuild other countries.
Right.
And then we create a lot of refugees that a lot of countries don't want. So, I mean, I certainly understand, but my whole thing is I think we have to push back in a very nice way and be positive and say to people that, you know, countries like Germany and Canada and the UK, they do take care of their own. And yes, people pay a little bit more, but that's what we're supposed to do, is take care of each other, right?
So absolutely. When I talk to anybody from the embassies down in D.C., I live in Hagerstown, so I'm an hour from Embassy Row and by the Naval Observatory or the National Monument there, or National Cathedral, and on down to the White House. You know, it's Embassy Row, it's called. It's Massachusetts Avenue, okay? When I talk to all them people, they're going, what is wrong with all you people? Why? I said, don't lump me in with those people. I'm not going to say the political word then, okay? So I won't say Republican.
Well, it's not just Republicans, it's everyone. I think sometimes we have to get away from labels too, because it's not that all Republicans does not want health care and not all Democrats. I think it's more it's us. We are the United States, and I think all of us, once we get away from the labels and we start thinking independently, you know, when you go to bed at night, and you're resting, You should also care about the people up the street. Are they sleeping well? Do they have food on the table? Do they have a car? You know, I mean, that's what it's all about.
I'm not going to leave out the atheists and stuff, but okay, if you love thy neighbor as yourself, let's just say it like that. And true Americans help out other Americans. It's never been that true Americans don't help out other Americans. That don't even sound right, does it? I mean, when I say that, it leaves a bad taste in my mouth. True Americans don't help out other Americans? That's not what it is.
I was raised in a country where we had Christians and Hindus and Muslims and others, and one of the things that we all got along, and the one thing that I always remember our Christian neighbors always said was, you know, you have to be your brother's keeper. And in Hinduism, we also said namaste, which meant the spirit that lives in me lives in you. And so I grew up, you know, not understanding why people didn't actually follow those words. And then I realized that sometimes life is a little bit hypocritical, you know?
Yeah. When they start setting conditions on people, they're not unconditional. So they're not following agape love, okay? And then all you have to do is read 1 Corinthians 13, okay? And if you don't have love and you do all kinds of miracles as angels or You're just a little sounding brass. You're not even nothing, it says.
Well, I wish you, Ted, I wish you well in your run for the 6th District in Maryland. And one day I would like for you to call back, and I'd like to speak about Medicare A, B, C, D. Because, you know, a lot of people, when they hit 65, they don't realize that they do have to buy a supplemental insurance. Yeah. And I see Dottie shaking her head about that. You want to jump in here, Dottie, real quick?
Yes. Your private insurer is always trying to get their money some way.
Just to say that that there are people that assume that when they're coming to 65 that everything will be covered by the government, and in fact there is the need to have a supplement, and the supplements are available in a number of different ways. They're not inexpensive, but they're really necessary.
Right, and you sold those as well, so you can probably tell us a little bit more about that. But thank you for taking the time for calling in. We really appreciate it. And I'll have you call back in another day, and I want to talk a little bit more about those supplements as well.
We definitely will. And I can tell you everything about Bankers Life Insurance Companies and about senior benefits and how they all work, you know, ARP and Aetna and all of them, okay?
Yeah, and give us your website in case any of my listeners who are tuning into Viewpoint with Sita and Friends would like to look at what you're running on and your platform as well.
Okay, the best place to get on my website is Facebook. It's Ted Athey for Congressman on Facebook, okay?
Yeah.
And it's all public, and I make sure everybody knows it. If you go to tedathey.com, somebody hacked it. So it has like a diet commercial with good-looking chicks with Under Armour on, you know, doing their commercial.
Oh,
so,
my goodness.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for running. You know what? It takes great people to want to change things. So thank you for running, and we wish you well. Thank you so much. I'll talk with you later.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it. Yes.
All right. So that was enlightening. I mean, you know what? It takes a lot to run for office, whether you're running as an independent, whether you're running as a Republican, a Democrat, but people want to give back to this country. And I think once your heart's in the right place, it's good. And he does have a good message because he sold insurance. He knows what he's talking about. I've followed him a little bit, and I understand. So for our listeners who are tuning in, now we're going to talk a little bit to Dottie Allen, who is the Chief Philanthropic Officer with Hospice of St. Francis, and with Angie Dunn. And it's nice because they're both my friends, and Dr. Gibson is here as well. So Dr. Gibson, before we jump in and start talking about Hospice of St. Francis, why don't you let our listeners know a little bit about yourself? You're also a friend of the show.
Yeah, I'm a friend of the show, but I want to really support Dottie and Angie in the reference to hospice, since I know my mom went into hospice, and I'd probably like to share something like that. But for those of you that are out there, my guests, just welcome to Sita and Friends. And I'm glad, thank you, Sita, for having me today as a co-host. And our company is all about training, empowering, and growing the future leaders of America. And basically what we do is we provide training for corporations. I am NSA speaker, nationwide certified. I speak globally. And we talk about different subjects. And I know today we just had our past guest was talking about one subject or next. We are a company that believe in diversity and inclusion. And I've done training for diversity and inclusion. And when I say diversity and inclusion, it's not always about black and white. It could be age, it could be sex, it could be also diversity and inclusion as it pertains to functionality within a corporation, the way the corporation functions, their areas of success. And what we try to do is we try to empower the next generation so that
they can be the best they can be.
They can be all they can be.
Yeah.
And sometimes I hear this a lot from parents and from some corporations, and maybe some people that say, oh, these millennials, they're lazy and so forth, you know. But they're not lazy. They just have a different concept of thinking. And they do things twice or three times as fast as some of us do. So we have to understand them. Now, in the workplace today, you have 5 different generations working in the workforce. So if the boomers like myself understand the pre-boomers and the millennials and, you know, the Gen X, then we could all get along. You know, we have to be all inclusive. And that means inclusive also in healthcare. You can't just look at Medicare, Medicaid. You have to look at other functional areas, the supplements, there are other support areas like hospice like we have here today. And you have to plan for these things. You just can't wait until
last minute. And that's a great segue for Hospice of St. Francis.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
So for our guests who are tuning in, Hospice of St. Francis is Brevard's longest serving and the only independent non-for-profit hospice. I am very grateful that they're here on the show today to share some wisdom and let our listeners know how to get on the website, how to learn about hospice, all the services and events, which we're going to talk about events in a little bit. So, Angie, tell us a little bit about what you do with Hospice of St. Francis.
What I do?
You have a big title there.
I have a big title. My job is to take care of the day-to-day operations for the foundation. So I handle a lot of paperwork, you could say. I work with the events, which is always a fun part for me. And I get to interact with some of the families that have their loved ones on our service. And some of them, you know, get to speak with them and hear their stories about how our service has touched their lives. Which that's one of my favorite parts.
So you get to provide passionate, quality care and while listening as well.
Absolutely.
That's what your hospice is all about. And Dottie, tell us a little bit about what you do with Hospice of St. Francis.
Well, I'm the number one money chick. I would say. As chief philanthropy officer, I started with Hospice of St. Francis 2 years ago this past month. And my job was to build a philanthropy program for the organization. They didn't really have a formal program in the past, and I have been in the field of philanthropy for quite a long time. So that was my job, was to be the architect. And what I found was that hospice has a little bit of a different challenge. Now, I used to be the president of Wusthof Foundation when there was a Wusthof Foundation. So I'm very familiar with grateful patients and how we would mail letters and invite all of the people that had used our services.
To give back.
At hospice. Most of our patients eventually die. So it's different in that respect. But the other thing that's really important about hospice is that the families that surround those patients, in addition to the patients themselves, need somebody to come in and put their arms around them and help them go through the biggest challenge of their lives. So we don't just have patients, we have families.
Right.
And that's what Angie was talking about, that she gets a chance.
It's a circle.
To talk to
yeah,
the
you,
families.
You guys, you put your arm around them. It's the families and the friends and the neighbors. And, you know, a lot, in America, I find culturally, a lot of people are not, they don't know how to grieve. It's not something that we talk about in this culture. We don't talk about death and dying. We're so geared towards go, go, go. Make money, live, pay mortgages, pay bills, and we never really take the time to sit down and talk about that process.
Well, the other thing that we don't do in this culture is we don't really respect aging. As long as you're young and thin and you drive a nice car, then you're it.
Yeah.
Until you hit that age.
But when you get to be a little bit older, unlike other cultures where the grandparents and the great-grandparents are really revered and held up at a higher level because of the fact that they have accumulated all of this knowledge and wisdom over the years.
Right.
Here, we don't do that in the way that other cultures do. And it's really a shame in a way because you have people in families and in society as a whole who have so much to give because of the fact that they lived it.
Yeah. I often wonder why that happened because, you know, I've been working in the nursing homes as a licensed practical nurse for almost 30-something years. And, you know, they always tell you if you go to college or if you go to vocational school or you go to a trade, if you find something that you love, that's great. You've accomplished your goal in the work-life balance, right? And I found that in working in the nursing homes. I absolutely love the elderly. I think they're fun. They have so much to give back. They've got a vast amount of knowledge. And the great thing is I listen to them. Even if I have a patient who has Alzheimer's, dementia, in between what they're saying, you could still figure out where this person is coming from. I remember I had a patient once who said to me, I think she was 95 years old, and she said, "Hey, honey, is it snowing outside?" And I said, "Why?" And she said, "Well, my brother's coming home." And she said, "Every day he comes home around 3 o'clock, hopping and skipping and kicking the snow with his feet." And she said, "All I want to do is just go outside and I want to wait for him." I said, "Well, how old are you?" And she says, "Do I have to tell you I'm 13? You know, so the thing is, I played along with it.
Meet them
and
where they are.
And for that moment, she was so happy. So I said, "Well, where do you live?" And she said, "I live in Connecticut." So I found out that here's this beautiful 90-something years old who lived on a beautiful home, and they had a white fence, and they had a porch, and she was sitting on that porch waiting for her brother to come home. And I said, "Well, aren't you cold?" She says, "I'm bundled up." So I could just see that scene in front of me. She was waiting for her brother to come home. So, you know, then you see this person in a different light. And you love them for who they are and where they've come in life. And I think that that's something that if people were to stop and just listen to their own grandparents and aunts and cousins, and they would find stories that they could relate to their children as well. So I'm not sure where we lost that, Angie. Where do you think we lost that? Where we don't have that time?
I think that our generations got more selfish. We have to get more done in a shorter amount of time. And that is an important thing. And I know I've made that very clear with my kids, and we had the blessings to do that with my grandmother before she passed. I told the kids, "Sit and listen." And I got her started telling stories. And she would tell stories about when she was in the military in England and the crazy things that she did. And my kids seen her as a real person instead of as this old woman. And I have told my cousins and my nieces and nephews, make sure you do this. It is the biggest blessing that we can all do is talk to our older generations and write down their stories. Share these stories that are going to go with them. And it helps you understand where that person came from and helps mold your family.
Right, and
this
how
is
many,
your family value.
And so many struggles and challenges that they went through. A lot of them faced a lot of issues in their lives with their husbands and children, and some of them had children that died, and they never really talked about it until they got older because they couldn't cope with that grief and that pain. So, Dr. Gibson, you've been in you're a military person. God, we thank you for your service.
Was,
29.
Was.
29.
You're always military.
29 years. You were active duty.
Yes.
Thank you.
And so, I worked as a nurse also. And
so you've seen some of what we're talking
I've
about.
I've seen some of what you have talked about. And one of the things when you talk about the death and dying process, Kubler-Ross wrote a book on death and dying. For the listeners that are out there, if you just Google Kubler-Ross, she wrote a very great book on death and dying. And it takes you through the stages. I've did a workshop on that before here locally. It takes you through the stages of death and dying. And I think... with Dottie and Angie, I'm sure that in their organization they have maybe somewhere or someone that they partner with that can help these families that talk about the death and dying process, because some people are still in the denial phase.
It's difficult
even
to let go.
Even when they come into hospice, they say, "Oh, she ain't gonna die." You know, I know right now of a lady that for 2 years she's been in like a induced coma. Her kids are keeping her on life support. It's been over 2 years. Mm-hmm. Yeah, on life support. And she can't really speak. She can't really articulate. I think they said her eyes are opening every now and then. But
they're having a hard time letting go.
Yeah, they're having a hard time letting go. And not only that, we need to learn to talk about it, because I know in my mom's generation, they didn't want to put not power of attorney, what you call that?
DNR.
Yeah, for a okay, living sorry, will.
Yeah. I think Dottie wants to jump in here.
Yeah,
can we just hold? We'll hold that conversation. We'll come back with Dottie, because I know Pastor Paul wants to play one spot. And so our listeners who are listening to Viewpoint with Sita and Friends, we'll be right back.
Portions of Viewpoint with Sita and Friends is sponsored by the friends and family of Sita Begee, author of 18 Brothers and Sisters, and founder of Simply Sita Skincare, and these great sponsors. Jotkoff Financial Group is a certified public accounting and a registered investment advisory firm with over 30 years of productive relationships with clients. Jotkoff Financial Group can assist you in meeting your accounting, tax, and business consulting and financial planning and insurance needs without expanding your internal workforce. With three locations here in Florida, here in Brevard County, Broward County, and Nassau County, contact Jotkoff Financial Group here in Brevard at 321-984-7345, located at 1122 South Wickham Road in Melbourne. That's Jotkoff Financial Group. On the web, you'll find them at www.jotkoff, that's JOTKOFF.com. Call the professionals at Jotkoff Financial Group today.
Welcome back, dear listeners. This is Sita Begee on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends on FM 1510 WWBC. We're on AM 1510 as well. We have a packed studio today. We have Dr. Amasita Gibson, who is joining me to co-host today. We have Angie Dunn, who is the operational manager with Friends Hospice of St. Francis. You made me laugh. And we also have Dottie Allen, who is the chief philanthropic officer with Hospice of St. Francis. And before we went on break, Dottie wanted to jump in. I know Dr. Gibson was talking about the Kubler-Ross and the stages of death and dying, and you wanted to jump in there.
Yeah, I did, because there are a couple of things that your listeners may not really understand about hospice. I think everybody has an idea that hospice is care for an individual who's going through the last months and weeks of life. And that's true. However, Dr. Kubler-Ross speaks to that in her book on death and dying. But the other part of the hospice service, and certainly a huge part of what we do at Hospice of St. Francis, is has to do with helping the patient and the family understand what's happening. Helping, I mentioned earlier, putting our arms around the family, helping them deal with things like anticipatory grief, yes, where the patient is still alive, the family knows that the patient is not going to be alive for a long, you know, for very long, and they start to grieve early on.
So you've taken Kubler-Ross's words and put it into action.
Yes.
And so, which is perfect, what hospice is all about.
Right.
So before we go further, give our listeners the website, because people might want to Google the website while we're talking. Angie, you might know it offhand.
It's hospiceofstfrancis.com.
Yes.
So I just had a question. Somebody sent me a private message. It says, when is the right time to talk about hospice? Any one of you could take that one.
Oh, I would say the right time to talk about hospice is today. And it doesn't matter how old you are, and it doesn't matter whether you have illnesses or whatever. You need to plan. You need to talk about the kinds of things that you would want to have in place if you were the hospice patient. We have a little booklet. It's called The Five Wishes. And it enables people to actually lay out what's important to them. You want to do that early on so that your family knows exactly what you think and what you want. And it makes it easier for them. So
it takes a burden off your family.
Talking about living and dying is a really important conversation that needs to happen in every family.
Absolutely.
Right.
Yeah, and if we was looking in the news lately, you know, movie stars that have millions and millions of dollars didn't have wills in place, you know, Prince for one, and
Aretha Franklin.
Yes. Yeah.
And we also, John McCain, when he passed away, they said he had hospice.
Yes.
And he, you know, I not just him, but, you know, Farrah Fawcett had it. A lot of these celebrities did believe in hospice. And the sad thing is, Angie, you might want to answer this one as well. A lot of people think that you only call hospice when you're dying, but you don't. Hospice, your hospice also offers, Hospice of St. Francis offers palliative care as well. Absolutely. So tell us a little bit about that.
We do. We have our pathways to healthcare, And that is for people who have ongoing illnesses. And it kind of takes you back to the older days where you can have the nurse comes out to you. The doctor potentially can come out to see you in your home where you need them. And they're going to help you work with all of the other doctors that you've been dealing with. They're going to make it so you have one care plan that's really set for you, which is very important. And this can be somebody who is, this is for people who are working on curative treatment, which means if you have a long-term illness and you're still trying to seek a cure, you can have this care. This does not mean end of life.
Right.
Whereas there is a point that sometimes they may
right.
go to
it's a transition.
End of life. But then you already know the care that you'll be able to have
right.
if you were to go to that level.
So you have that plan. And one of the nice things about Hospice of St. Francis is that every patient have access to hospice volunteer, a nurse, a social worker, a home health aide, and a chaplain. So talk a little bit about the chaplain. It doesn't matter what religion you are and what race you are, where you come from, if you want it. I love that about Hospice of St. Francis that you guys offer that service.
Absolutely. And the chaplains will come out to the homes, and they are trained in all faiths, whether you have faith, a faith or not. Whatever, wherever you are, they're there to be with you. And they will be beside you, they will guide you, and if need be, they will perform the final ceremonies for you based on what is your faith, which is great. I think one of the things that I would also like to mention that I think is important for hospice is not just do we take care of the families within our care that have patients within our care, but our bereavement teams take care of all of Brevard County. Everybody is touched by grief at some point, and all ages. From three-year-olds up to, 110-year-olds deal with grief. And our bereavement programs are for all ages and for everybody. And they're free to the public, anybody and everybody. So you hear about a horrible thing that happens to a young person. Our teams will still take care of the other friends at the school. They're not the family of it, but they need somebody to come be with them and help them at their age point. And we have that available through our North Star program, which is very important.
And one of the nice things about Hospice of St. Francis versus other hospices is that you all are a nonprofit. And I love that you focus on Brevard. Dottie, where are some of the areas that Hospice of St. Francis outreaches to? Brevard County, you go down to Sebastian as well? Vero Beach?
The hospice benefit in the state of Florida is driven by what's called Certificate of Need. So the state tells you what your territory is. So our territory is Brevard County for the hospice program. We could see a palliative care patient or a bereavement patient that was outside of that area. But for hospice, it's Brevard County. But we are from Mims to Mico.
I saw your billboard. You have a few nice billboards.
We're up and down the county. In fact, we probably have... right now, we probably have more patients in Mid and South County than we do in North County.
So we know that you all see a patient as soon as you get a referral, as soon as a formal referral is made. So, Dottie, let's talk about some of the services offered by Hospice of St. Francis, and how do we pay for it? Because that's where you come in handy and all the events and stuff. So what are some of the services offered? Besides, we have nursing care and a chaplain, and we have the volunteers. What other services are offered?
Well, you have the basic hospice benefit, which is delivered by what we call an interdisciplinary team. So it has all of doctors, nurses, certified nursing assistants, volunteers, social workers, chaplains. All of those people come together once a week. And they talk about every single patient from an interdisciplinary perspective so that the patient really gets the full spectrum of care. So that's one benefit. And Angie mentioned the palliative care program, St. Francis Pathways to Healthcare. In addition to that, we have a bereavement program that offers individual sessions and group sessions for anybody that is... grieving and needs to have that help. They reach out after the patient dies. They reach out to the family and they invite them to be part of the bereavement program. And sometimes it takes a little while for them to realize that they're having a need to have some intervention. Angie mentioned North Star program, which is grieving for children. because children grieve in different ways depending on how old they are. And so it's a very specialized program.
And some have no support at home.
Some have no support at home. All of that kind of wraps around the overall hospice experience. And in addition to that, we have some very special programs for veterans that acknowledge the veteran service. And we have a pinning ceremony and a way for the veteran to express her or his story of military service.
Yeah, I attended one of those in the nursing home when you fold the flag and all that. Yeah. And for our listeners who are tuning in, this is Sita Begee on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends on WWBC AM 1510 and FM 94.7, FM 99.9, and FM 100.7. We're also live on the web. And Ellen, when she comes back, she will have this show posted on our website. I'm so grateful to Dr. Amasitia Gibson, who is filling in today for Ellen. And I love when you're on the show because your military service, I look at you and I want to just give you hugs all the time for everything you and your husband have done for us, and all the treasures and wisdom that you share with us. We also have Angie Dunn here with us, and we also have Dottie Allen. Now one of the things that I wanted to talk about today before the time, because it's already 1:42, was the big gala that's coming up. I hope I'm saying gala or gala. I never know which one to use, right?
You say either tomato, one. I say tomato.
Right? It's my Trinidadian accent. But right. I did buy my tickets.
Oh, that's
and
terrific.
I'm coming, and I told Dr. Begee, I said, I know you don't like to attend a lot of events, but this is one that I would prefer that you come with me and be my date.
Oh.
So tell our listeners about that nice purple, it's a purple invitation I got in the mail. I love purple, by the way.
If you... I want to put the event in the context of fundraising programs in general. I've often said that in the 25 plus years that I've been a philanthropy executive, I've never asked anyone for money. And when I say that, the eyebrows go up and everybody says, oh, well, that's ridiculous. But I don't see philanthropy as fundraising. I see it as relationship building. Mm-hmm. It's building a family around our mission, which is uplifting lives, uplifting each other, uplifting our community. And so some of the things that we do are to educate people. We send letters, we send newsletters, but we also have two events every year, and they're really very much focused on the mission that I just
outlined. Yeah.
The one that's coming up on October 25th is called Legends, the Hospice of St. Francis Generosity Awards. It's the second year. We're honoring a number of people who, through their volunteerism and their philanthropy, have really raised philanthropy up as a community cultural value. And they are Christine Sylvester, who's from Titusville, Jerry and Judy Allender, the Ambika Ravindran, and also the late Ron Norris. So it's going to be at Rockledge Country Club on October 25th, and tickets are $100 a piece. It's a beautiful, elegant event. And Angie, what's the website?
www.hospicesofstfrancis.com. Now, Ambika is a good friend of mine. Actually, I texted her last night a picture. I went to the Space Coast Pride Festival. Mm-hmm. And her son is supporting one of the candidates who's running for office. And I sent a picture of her son and myself and Sanjay Patel for her, and she loved it. Yeah. They do give a lot, her and Dr. Ravi. Let's just say Ravi. The name is too long. Ravi P. Dr. P.
Palani Andi.
Yeah, you know how to say it, Dr. P.
I do, because when I was at Ustoff, they gave us $1,000,001.
For the hospice unit.
Extra one, according to Ambika, in the Indian culture, they always give a little bit more than is asked for. So it was $1,000,000 plus $1. And that was to create the hospice house, which is on Eister.
Yeah, I remember when that happened. Yeah. And they give a lot, though, to Brevard Schools Foundation as well.
Do.
You know, and that's what it's all about. We were talking about that earlier. That to all of us who have been given so much, that we give back. And they're one of the people in my life that have inspired me so much. I would never have as much as they do. But they have inspired me to give back, even if it's $10 to a charity or $100, because when I watch how they've been blessed and how much they give back, it warms my heart that they're my personal friends as well. I see Angie want to jump in here.
Actually, that's a reason for each one of them being honored. Each one of the people that we are recognizing this year has that same give to the community. Just give and give and give and give.
Right.
And that's what we want to encourage, and that's what we want to celebrate. Because it is so important, and as we have talked before, it's how we help each other in this world. We can all hold each other's hand, and when one person starts lifting people up, then we can all uplift each other.
And you know, people always wonder when we're talking about charities or we're talking about nonprofits, where does the money go that you collect, that people will to you or leave their life insurance, the hospice of St. Francis, which I hope some people do. They always wonder, well, what are you doing with this money that you're collecting? So tell our listeners a little bit about Hospice of St. Francis and what we do, because there's such a need in the community for all these services.
Well, first of all, I want to make one point. And this was actually a quote from Ambika. Ambika says, it's not about the check. She says, anybody can write a check. Of whatever level. She said, it's about getting involved. It's about putting time and effort and thought into it. And that's really the essence of volunteerism. But in terms of how the money is used, in our organization, the hospice benefit is paid for by the Medicare program and by private insurances. But all of the rest of the things that we do, the bereavement program that we have, the North Star program, all of the rest of that is not paid for by any outside source. So in order for us to offer all of that, and we believe the family deserves that kind of a full benefit, we rely on philanthropy to help make those services possible. So if you make a gift to us, it goes right into helping a 7-year-old deal with the death of her father, or in the case of our pet pledge program, a patient who has had a treasured pet for 15 years and can't care for that animal anymore, of us helping to find a place, a new home for that pet, or pinning a veteran, or all of the other things that circle around the patient and the hospice benefit.
Yes.
Without philanthropy, it might not be possible.
Right.
I think it's all about legacy. You know, when I went for our fundraiser for ATIC and MG Center for Excellence, when we receive any funds, it's all about legacy. Leaving this world better than we have
found it.
Yes. You know, giving back. And it doesn't matter if you give $1 million or a dollar, you give at your level.
And you
that
feel
you
so
give.
Good when you give. You know, that feeling of giving. And knowing that it's going to be used for something great, like with hospice, they need wheelchairs, they need walkers, they need oxygen tanks, they need somebody to pay for a lunch for a loved one who's grieving, put gas in the car for someone. Hospice does a lot of little things that add on the side for people as well, right?
And we actually have many patients that don't have any insurance and may not even be eligible for Medicare. People who have come to this country that are not necessarily a part of the governmental systems. So we want to be sure that the services are available in full for everyone.
And you're always looking for businesses to partner with, and you're always looking for volunteers. Mm-hmm. So, and your volunteers, I love volunteers. Where would we be without people who had the extra time on their hands and did not decide to give it to us or stay engaged in the community? So talk a little bit about your volunteers and how people could get more involved.
We have a great volunteer source and team. In fact, our volunteer team is about the same size as our staff, mm-hmm. which is fabulous. And we love our volunteers and appreciate each and every one of them. We have volunteers that do our veterans pinning ceremonies that we've been talking about. We have volunteers that make quilts. Each one of our veterans is given a quilt that's personalized for them and their military service. We have volunteers that will make blankets for our patients. We have volunteers that answer the phone, send out mailings for us, sit with patients so that their families can go to the grocery store.
I've heard of Hospice of St. Francis having volunteers that would pay. But your application process is rigorous as well.
It is.
You just don't take anybody off the street to be a volunteer, which I like.
Well, one of the important things about that is making sure that they're volunteering where they need to be, where what suits them.
To
because if
them.
You don't want to have somebody answering, just answering the phones when they could be helping a patient in a different way. Mm-hmm. You know, if that's not something that they wanted, if they want to answer the phones, then wonderful. But if they're not comfortable with it, you don't want them doing that.
Right.
You want them using their source, their talents, where it's best fit. And that's what we try to do, is put their the volunteer in the best position for them.
So, Dr. Gibson, you know what? I think as I get older, you know, I've said that in your 20s, you're soaring. In your 30s, you're flying high. In your 40s, you're cruising. In your 50s, a little bit of Mr. Sickness is coming in. By your 60s, something is there. Some system is affected, right? And by your 70s, you're like, oh my God, I need to share this wealth of knowledge that all these decades have given to me. And what I find as I get older, and thank you God every day for health and strength and being alive on this planet to give back, I find that the gift of listening has been one of the greatest things that I've developed. What we'll go around with the four of us and see, what do you think is the greatest gift? Because even with hospice, patients sometimes they just want you to hold their hand and listen. What do you find as you get older?
The greatest, and you'll see this on my website, and you'll see it on training documents that I send out. I say giving is a part of living, and the best thing that you can give that is priceless is your time. You cannot put value on anybody's time, the talents or the gifts. So your time is priceless. And I always, when I ask people to volunteer with me, I appreciate the time sometimes more than the money.
Yeah, even for Christmas sometimes, you know, you say you appreciate your family coming over more than gifts. What about you, Dottie? What do you think is so, now that we're getting, all of us at that age where we could give back? I love to listen. What do you like?
I think that having a generous heart is probably one of the most important things. I mean, we live in a world where cynicism is easy. You know, it's easy to take the negative side of things. And I think that having a generous heart means that you have empathy, you have sympathy, you have kindness, you have a lot of values that all kind of roll up into that. It's a very positive and wonderful place to be.
Yeah. What about you, Angie?
I think I would say one of the most important things is a kind word and a smile. Because I think a smile, when you smile to somebody, it's contagious. Mm-hmm. And I think you can change somebody else's day with a smile and just uplifting them. If we uplift each other, you know, our mission is uplifting lives, uplifting each other, and uplifting our community. And to me, that is a personal mission. I love that. And every day, I try to make sure that I've uplifted somebody else. And I think if we all do that, I think everything that we've discussed, that we've all said of our times and our talents, our kindness, it's all about uplifting each other.
I read once where someone was trying to make America more kinder and gentler. And I think it takes wise people like us. We're all from all different backgrounds, obviously different faiths as well. But I think that's what it takes. Is that for us to set the example, to show positivity, and to, so otherwise, it's you're right. It's so easy to just jump on a bandwagon when someone is saying something hateful or spiteful, or you know you're seeing a lot of bigotry and all. And you say, okay, well I'm just gonna be there. I heard someone once say to me, well, people are elite in the way they live or they think or the political party that they're with. There's nothing elite about hatred or racism or bigotry, because at the end, we're all going to leave this planet. No one is checking out alive, the last time I checked, right? So I think organizations such as Hospice of St. Francis and all the great things that you all do with services and bereavement support and helping people at that end of life to for comfort is so necessary in our nation. And I love that we're able to spread the word on our show for you all in Brevard, here in Brevard at least. So, Dottie, what else can you tell us about the philanthropic side? What did we miss?
Well, I would say that I would want to leave you with five things. If everybody can remember these five things, and this is true of philanthropy. It's true of philanthropy. It's also, I think, true in our world. That if you could do five things for us, one of them would be to be informed, be a person who really understands and is informed about the issue of hospice and palliative care. The second thing would be to advocate for us in the community. You've heard a lot of things here on the show. Hopefully you're pleased and impressed. Tell other people about us. The third thing would be, if you need to use our services, if you need hospice or palliative care services, call us. Use our services. The fourth thing would be to support us philanthropically with a financial gift, because it helps support those programs I mentioned. And the fifth thing, which Dr. Gimson mentioned, is to give the gift of time. It's the ultimate, it's the new world currency. And give the gift of time.
Oh, I
and
love become, that.
Become
the new world currency.
The new world currency. Become a volunteer.
And Angie, this is a yes-no question. If a person requires hospice care and reside in a nursing facility, can they get hospice care?
Absolutely, yes.
Hospice of St. Francis will meet the family in the nursing home.
Anywhere they are, whether they're at home in their residence or their home is assisted living facility or a full-time care facility, they will be there. Or a hospital. We come to the hospitals as well.
And another question, what happens if a person cannot stay at home due to increasing care need and requires a different place to stay during the final phase of life?
We do have the Edward M. Poe Care Center, so we have our own hospice house that is located in Titusville, and they can be transferred up there and have full-time care.
It would be for people who need that level of care, however.
Okay, so we have a minute and a half left, and I wanted to get this question in before we go off air. Viewpoint with Seed and Friends. I mean, it's just a nice, calm show today. I love it. I like when we're talking about peace and unity and helping people. How can a person be sure that the quality of hospice care is provided that they were assured they were going to get? Do you have oversight and transparency and all that?
Well, there is an interesting thing that we didn't mention. Hospice of St. Francis was just given an award.
Ooh.
It's through hospice. It's the Hospice Honors Elite Award. It's for quality of care. We're the only one in Brevard County, with only two in Florida, and one of 65 in the entire country to receive the Hospice Honors Elite Award for quality care.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
And you're always looking for nurses and volunteers
oh,
and
yes.
people. So I urge my friends to go on the website and check it out. I love Hospice of St. Francis myself. I find them to come into a patient's life and family's life and just give them their all. And it's very nice that it's a nonprofit, because you could feel that. They're not concerned about making money off that patient or their services or their insurances and whatnot. And I love that, because it's more patient-centered care. So, Angie, this is your job to give the website one more time. And Dr. Gibson, you could give us your website, too.
Okay. It is hospiceofstfrancis.com.
And thank you, Angie, for saying smile, because smile is universal. You could understand it in any language. And it's www.inspireleadgrow.com. Bye.
Okay, we'll see you next week. This is Sita McGee on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. I almost said this is Ellen Little. We miss her. We'll be back next week.
You're listening to WWBC, Cocoa, Merritt Island, Melbourne, Titusville, and the Beaches, 1510 AM, as well as W234BI, Cocoa, Vieira.